Welcome to the Pelvic Floor Fit Podcast. My name is Dr. Emily, and I am a mama of three under three. I'm a pelvic health physical therapist, and I'm a certified pre and postnatal fitness coach. And it is my absolute passion to empower y'all to achieve a pain-free pregnancy, the birth of your dreams, and a confident postpartum recovery. Just a quick reminder about information that I share in this podcast. It is not intended to be taken as medical advice intended to diagnose or treat any illness or condition. You should speak with your healthcare provider about any of the topics discussed and how they may or may not pertain to you. While I am a pelvic health physical therapist and certified pre and postnatal fitness coach, we do not have a therapist-patient relationship or trainer-client relationship. Hey mamas, can't wait for you to hear this week's episode. I brought my good friend Sarah back on, gestational diabetes nurse, to talk about preparing our bodies well for birth and recovering well postpartum. We discussed some of the things that she experienced herself in her motherhood journey, but also things that she's seen in a lot of her patients, and how we can better support our bodies throughout this process. So can't wait for you to hear more.
Hi guys, good morning, how are you?
We're good. We've got two toddlers running around, so we'll see how this goes, but
that's awesome.
Hopefully we can find about 15 minutes of peace. Yeah. To get some good information out there. I know a lot of your audience was wanting to hear more about preparing our bodies really well for birth.
Yeah.
And also to set us up well for recovery. And something I love to tell my patients and clients is it's really a spectrum, right? So like whenever you learn this stuff, just start implementing it and you'll thank yourself later. You know, whether you have yet to conceive or you're newly pregnant or you're a week away from your due date or you've already had baby, like there's never a time that's too early or too late. But the work that we do ahead of time is always going to prepare us really well down the road to enjoy the experience a lot more, to feel more supported, to have better outcomes and all of the things.
And recovery.
Yes. And it the body is so resilient. It's not one of those things like if you didn't know these things with baby number one, now you're screwed for baby number two.
Right, exactly.
And I've done it wrong myself. Like my first pregnancy was not fun. I'm a cesarean mama. Like I've been there. But
can you tell us like more about your birth story? I'm a labor and delivery nurse, so I can talk more about that all the time.
Yeah. So my first, I was incredibly fit before my pregnancy, but I didn't really spend time on like pelvic health things. It was more just like general fitness. I actually really overtrained quite a bit and under ate. So I was not doing what I would advise people to do. And then like totally let myself go that pregnancy because I was very like in extreme. So I was either like super ripped, you know, running 20 plus miles a week, lifting at least 5 hours a week. And eating way too few calories.
Right.
Or it was like, screw it, I'm pregnant. Like, I'm going to gain weight anyway. Just eat all the things. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where, I mean, I really couldn't walk a mile that pregnancy towards the end because my shins once were so debilitating.
Yeah.
And I have a pretty high pain tolerance. So it was horrible. And around 30 weeks, they got concerned that he had IUGR. Mm-hmm. And so then we started doing a ton of extra monitoring.
Yeah.
They never found anything that was wrong.
But
they were just, they were just concerned that he was so small, which I mean, I'm very small. My husband's very small. It really wasn't that surprising to me, but it was
common things are common.
Yes. Yes. And so they basically were like, we have to induce it 37 weeks
because
this isn't safe and blah, blah, blah.
Small, then.
And we kept asking like, but why isn't it safe? Like, you know, everything looks good. Like we don't see anything that's a sign of danger. He's just small, but he's symmetrically small and everything. So they induced me at 37 weeks, which with my first, which, you know, statistically doesn't tend to go super great.
Yep.
So 30 hours.
What did they use?
A Pitocin.
Right away?
Right away. Okay. Yep. So 30 hours on Pitocin, he started decelling, which is to be expected. So
did they put a balloon too?
Did they what?
They put a balloon too?
Nope, I never dilated at all.
Just Pitocin?
Yep. That's they went weird. Straight to Pitocin. I never dilated. And so he started decelling and they were like, we have to do a cesarean.
Wow. And
the stress of that put him in the NICU for a couple of days. And it was a horrible first birth experience. Like I'm you know, you live and you learn though. And there are lots of times I look back on that and I really feel like the Lord allowed that to happen because I have so many mamas who that's, you know, they have a similar story.
And right. I can learn from you.
I've been there. It sucks, but there's a better way. It does get better.
I love that.
With my daughter, we had a successful VBAC.
Yeah. Christmas love that. Morning.
So that love was. That. So wonderful. So
did you change doctors, by the way?
I did. So, and I will say I'm pretty dang crunchy these days. So we switched to midwifery care with my daughter. But
because they are more pro vaginal delivery.
Yes. And I mean, I think honestly, as far as that goes, my advice is like, just do your research because
read your reviews.
Yes, and talk to moms. Like, if you have Facebook groups in your area, that's been huge for me because when you actually get a mom that you can, like, message back and forth with and be like, okay, but really what happened?
Yeah.
Because you'll have some OB-GYNs who are more supportive of your birth plan than some midwives. Just having a midwife doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're going to have a natural birth.
Right.
Even if, you know, you do everything quote unquote right.
Right. Sometimes the baby, you know, it's just inevitable for the safety, but there are doctors who are more prone to section. Let's put it that way. And do your research, guys.
Yes. And I think also like the hospitals that they're affiliated with and things like that ties their hands more or less because that was honestly my, like my end, I don't know how I want to say it, analysis is, I mean, I really felt like my OB-GYN was very sweet and very supportive, but I think her hands were pretty tied. And she felt like she was being kind of pushed into like, okay, we see this number, so we have to do this.
Right.
And not really taking all the factors into consideration. But ultimately, you know, we wound up with a successful VBAC. I did my second pregnancy very differently, which I've had pregnancies super close together. I got pregnant with my second when I was 8 months postpartum.
I was 6 months.
Yeah. So, I mean, super close.
Yes.
And then I actually, at 6 months postpartum after my son, I had a massive injury. I destroyed my knee, MCL and ACL.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I was recovering from that and had reconstructive surgery before I got pregnant with my daughter. So I was like still trying to recover completely from my cesarean and then also my knee surgery.
Right.
While I was pregnant with my second. So when I tell y'all like you can do it,
I was just gonna say like if you never would have told anyone that story, they look at your post and they're like, oh my god, this girl has been training for years.
Well, that's so cool. And I will say, like, full disclaimer, I was lifting, you know, for 6 years prior to getting pregnant the first time, so there's definitely a background there. But I mean, I was not in shape after my son. Like, I was rock bottom in my fitness journey, you know? So, if I can come back, you know, recovering from a C-section and a massive reconstructive surgery while pregnant, like, literally anyone can get fitter during pregnancy. Anyone can set themselves up well for birth. I don't have special genes. I'm not special. Like, I just really wanted it.
Right. You didn't give up.
Consistent. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And that's a big thing I love to teach moms too, is like, it does not take hours in the gym because ain't nobody got time for that. Like, I don't, I love it, but I don't have time to lift for hours. I get like 10, 15 minute chunks of time. And a lot of the time there are two toddlers crawling all over me while I'm doing it. And like,
and I love that that you show that in your like posts too, in your reels.
Well, and I just want to encourage moms, like if you really prefer exercise to be alone time, right, that's totally fine. Like, I really enjoy that some days. Some days, like they're being a lot, like love you, put you down for a nap, and I go in the gym.
Mama time. Like,
And I get to feel like, you know, a really strong, awesome mama on my own and like feel like myself. And sometimes it's like I'm working out, they're playing, and especially now my son is 2.5 and he'll start telling me like, mommy, do push-ups with me. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Like,
so you're making an impact on him too.
Yes. It's like if I wouldn't do the hard thing of including them, they wouldn't have that perspective.
Yeah, and I love that.
That's the other cool thing is like, is it harder? Sure. It's more complicated. Your workout may not look as Instagram perfect. You may be doing toddler squats instead of barbell squats. Yeah. But you're moving your body. You're getting stronger. You're building that mind-muscle connection. Yeah. And you're teaching your kids amazing lessons.
That's so amazing. So, I love that.
It's totally worth it. And I really think down the road, you know, you're going to be really proud that you pushed through.
Yeah.
I like to call it building your resourcefulness muscle.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I kind of have my plan A, B, C with any given workout that I'm like, okay, I really want to do a leg day today.
Well, let's see how the kids are.
Yeah, my plan is we're going to get it in after breakfast with the kids. If they're being crazy, then maybe I have to get it in during nap time. If, you know,
that's the life of a mom. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And when you only have a 10-minute target, then that helps a lot too, because
it's realistic.
Yes. You're not going to be feeling like, gosh, I barely even got my warm up done. And then, you know, this happened or whatever.
Barely drink my coffee.
Yes. I know. My coffee is always cold.
Yes.
that's just real life. And it's fine. It still tastes good.
My husband always laughs at me. He's like, how do you drink your coffee cold? That's disgusting. And I'm like, I got used to it already.
Oh, yeah. It's still great.
Yeah.
But,
But do you feel like preparing for your, like you said, the first pregnancy, you weren't really preparing for birth. And then the second one, you were preparing. And like, did you feel like that helped you have a VBAC?
Absolutely. And so there are definitely a lot of things that we can do to prepare our bodies well for birth. Obviously, it depends on where we're starting this process, the advice that I give. Because, you know, if you just found out you're pregnant, if you're first trimester, awesome. Like, we can do some serious strength training. We can do a lot to really prepare yourself well to feel great throughout pregnancy and into birth. Because ultimately, that has a lot to do with how we birth.
Yeah.
Right? If we have debilitating back pain and sciatica and all these things that have been, we've just been dealing with them for 9 months, our body's not going to be in an optimal state.
I had that with my first. I had such bad sciatic nerve pain. Mm-hmm. And I love my OB. Like, she is who she is. She's just great at vaginal deliveries. Like, she will go to ends of earth for you to have a beautiful vaginal delivery. But when I told her, like, you know, I had this horrible pain. I couldn't even walk down labor and delivery holding like the instruments of a vaginal delivery. And she was like, well, it's common. You know, it'll go away after you have your baby. I mean, I love her. Like, she didn't, I'm sure she didn't just get educated on that. Like, there's things you can do. And I had to do my own research and like find a chiropractor and like do stretches at night with my husband. And like, but like you teaching women how to relieve that pain, that's so amazing. It's horrible.
It's a huge passion of mine because all of those things are super common.
And
you understand the physiology, you understand why. And I love to teach moms like it. I'm not saying when I say pain-free pregnancy, I'm not saying I never feel pain.
Right.
Pregnancy. I'm saying
you're not a miracle worker.
Yeah. And I'm not special. Like my, you know, I have pains that come up because that's kind of part of pregnancy is these things are gonna come up. But when I feel that pain, I know why, I know what to do about it, and I fix it that day. so I don't just deal with it and let my nervous system get more ramped up.
Yeah.
My pelvic floor tighter and tighter, and my pelvis is, you know, more and more out of whack. And like, it's just not, it's not a good recipe for birth.
I love that. Can you give like an example? What you, like, why does sciatic nerve pain happen, and like what you can do about it practically?
Absolutely. So sciatic pain.
Hey, you're okay. It can be caused by a lot of things. The number one thing that I see is piriformis syndrome. So that's where your piriformis muscle is really irritated. So whether it's too tight or...
I love this one.
Like, I don't care what you have planned for me.
Yeah.
Whether it's really, really tight or the nerve is just not gliding well, our anatomy will either have the sciatic nerve running through the piriformis muscle or beneath. So if your piriformis muscle is super tight, if there's any kind of like adhesions or things that's not allowing it to move like it normally should, I mean, when you touch your toes and stand up, like it has to be able to stretch and move. And I like to use the term neural flossing, because I think that kind of gives you like a visual when you think about flossing your teeth. Like, our nerves have to be able to move and be mobile. And when that's not happening, that's going to cause pain. It's going to cause the nerve to be extra reactive. You can also have just general like nerve reactivity because of other, like if your pelvis isn't super stable, which it won't be during pregnancy, right? Because our hormones are loosening up those joints on purpose. But if they get to be painful, because those joints of your pelvis are supposed to be stable naturally, right? So when they loosen up and they move and shift a little bit, that's painful. So I like to address the piriformis muscle. I like to teach women how to improve their pelvis stability with their muscles. You don't have to buy a pregnancy belt. You can do some exercises and get the exact benefit, and actually better benefit, because it's literally built-in support. And that typically done a lot.
Is it also from the way the baby's position, like pressing on the nerve? Could that be, like, for example, my second one was OP, so he was sunny side up. So I had sciatic nerve with him too, but I'm just curious, is that why?
Positioning can definitely play a role. I mean, there are so many different factors, and that's why, you know, I always like to tell mamas, like, these are things that help a lot of women, but, you know, if this isn't working, like, go find a pelvic health PT in your area so she can actually check you out.
Right.
You know, and support on you. Because I feel like a lot of women, if they will address the piriformis muscle and they'll address pelvic stability, that cuts out like 80 to 90% of the problem for most women. Sometimes, yeah, baby might be in a wonky position. We might even have, like, you know, if you have a previous tailbone injury or something like that. Like, there are just so many factors that can play a role, especially anything to do with nerves and the nervous system. There's so many different roles. But it is really cool that, like, you can learn some super, super simple things, and that can make a big, big difference, if not fix it.
That's so awesome. I was willing to do anything to fix it. That's so awesome that you have practical tips to help women with that. Well, like, a game changer. You don't have to suffer your whole pregnancy and look back and be like, oh my God, it was terrible.
No, and honestly, postpartum, it's a big issue too, right? Because we still have the hormonal changes and we still have the joint laxity. So a lot of women will have like pubic symphysis dysfunction. In postpartum.
Yes.
And they think, why am I having this now? Like, isn't that a pregnancy thing? But it's all related to pelvic stability.
It happens after if they push for a while also, or if it's a big baby. Like, I've seen women, like, they leave the hospital. I mean, I'm not scaring anyone here, but like, if it's really out of line, like she said, they might need like a scan, like, to see what's going on, and then some of them need to like go home in a wheelchair, like they can't even walk, which is really like frightening, because if they would have prepared for birth, they wouldn't have that, right, necessarily.
Well,
Well, and even if you do have a really crazy traumatic birth, if you understand pelvic health and you understand these kinds of exercises, then I think it's a lot less intimidating. That's a reason, another reason why I love to work with women during pregnancy and not just postpartum. When people tend to get referred to pelvic health PT is postpartum, because it's like, okay, the damage has been done, now let's fix it. But if you actually know what to expect and you realize that like birth is a huge process, it's a big, big change to our bodies, and you understand that and you have that expectation going in and you know things to support yourself, and you're not so freaked out, and it's like, okay, yeah, I feel like I got hit by a truck right now, but it's okay. Like that's how you're gonna feel if you had a really rough birth, but this is what I need to do to get back up on my feet, you know. Like, I'm not gonna just lay in bed for 6 weeks until I get cleared and then I feel like I can go, you know, to the gym. Like, I'm gonna know to work on my breath, I'm gonna know to work on my pelvic floor, I'm gonna know to start doing these gentle mobility exercises. And
I love that. Just,
what's too much, what's not, you know.
And
you're gonna feel
you had hard. Yeah, and because you had a section and a vaginal delivery, you can teach for both.
Yeah,
which is awesome.
Yeah, and I can tell you, like, some of these movements were a little bit, like, I had to wait a little bit longer after finishing them, and some of them I had to wait a little bit longer for a vaginal. And obviously, every woman's different. Even every pregnancy is different. Like I just said, even with mine. But, like, learning how to really connect with your body and listen to what it's telling you and then how to support it, like, I'm just all about, like, making women the experts of their own bodies.
That's
because
okay.
ultimately, I don't want you to just, you know, hey, Dr. Emily, how do I, like, I want you
like
to,
a general, like,
I need to do this.
Yeah, I love that.
But some of the top things that I recommend for preparing for birth would be to learn how to actually relax your pelvic floor. So many of us have heard of Kegels. Some of us have probably done them. A lot of us actually do them wrong.
I heard
so that's
that, yeah.
A whole other spiel that we probably don't have time for, but we want to make sure we're really isolating the muscles of the perineum. We're not squeezing our abs or the muscles inside our thighs or our glutes. That it's really, really isolated. So that's what a Kegel is. To relax your pelvic floor would be to do the opposite, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I like to kind of explain like an elevator. So if our relaxed state is like ground level, then a contraction would be going up to the next floor, right? Because we're lifting up. If we're actually elongating, like we do when we need to pass gas or have a bowel movement or have a baby, going down to the basement, we're going to be stretching those muscles.
Right.
And so to have a good birth experience, our pelvic floor needs to be able to be relaxed. It needs to be able to contract, and it needs to be able to elongate. It needs to have that full range of motion. And if you think about like your hamstrings, you can kind of picture that, you know, like at rest, they shouldn't be super tight. They shouldn't be, you know, rock hard. When you touch your toes, they're stretching. When you stand up, they're contracting and getting, you know, firm and tight, doing their jobs. So we want to make sure that we understand how to do that. And for some women, that's really hard. For some women, they have no problem contracting their pelvic floor, but they're stuck in a contracted state. They're stuck at level one instead of at ground. So for a lot of women, we have to work on relaxing.
Actually, that sounds like it could help with contractions too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It has
to do with your nervous system too. Like if your nervous system is way geared up, your pelvic floor tends to be a little bit overactive.
And so when
you have pain with intimacy or with inserting tampons or things like that, vaginal exams, if that's painful for you, you might have an overactive pelvic floor.
Oh, wow. So that's good to know.
Yeah, and it's super common. Like everyone talks about a weak pelvic floor, but they don't talk about an overactive pelvic floor.
Yeah.
So that's a big component. And then we can also do exercises to open our pelvic inlet, so to help get baby engaged. And I know that's something like L&D and doulas and midwives and OB-GYNs and like a lot of practitioners have great ideas for that. And I personally don't find like one or two are the best. I feel like just
It depends on your baby's position. Like for my second one, he was OP, like I said, sunny side up. So I actually did the cowgirl position with the peanut ball, and that like turned him. So it was so cool. I felt like the big like movement. It was so like, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yes. So I love that there's so many ideas out there, and like just try them all. Like just keep trying.
Yeah.
We also, you know, obviously if we have time, we want to really prepare our mobility of all of our joints and our strengths. But if we're like crunch time, like in the last month of pregnancy or something.
Let's say somebody finds you like close to delivery.
Yeah. Perineal massage can be a great option. Now there are some cases where that might not be advisable. Like if you've been put on pelvic rest for some reason.
Yeah, of course.
Or if you have significant tears that haven't healed previously or things like that, it may not be a great option for you, but it's something we can do in like 30 seconds a day that really can reduce our risk of tearing because we're slowly preparing those tissues for the massive of stretch that they're going to have. And I like to use the analogy again of hamstrings. Like you don't want to like push yourself as hard as you physically can with that stretch because you're going to pull something, you're going to hurt something, and you're actually going to set yourself back for your birth experience. We want it to be gradual and incremental.
I love that.
But especially stretching, like if you think about the opening of the word that we probably can't say because we're on social media, you want to think about the 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock position, especially on the clock, because that's where perineal tears tend to be most common. So if you're crunched for time or you're just starting this process, I kind of focus on that.
I love that.
You typically tear towards the top or the, you know,
right,
the front.
You typically to the side. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you have time, like just kind of go through the clock motions with a gentle stretch for about 30 seconds. You can work up to a minute. We want to be breathing. We don't want to be pushing too hard.
Yeah.
It should be very gradual, but that can make a big difference in tearing.
What about people who had like really bad tears in the past?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't recommend doing that?
It depends. I think for some women, if they have enough time, they can do some scar tissue massage and mobilization to actually work on that scar tissue. And actually in their case, that might be a better use of their time than trying to do stretching. So we can work on that scar tissue by pinching those tissues between our fingers and rubbing like side to side, front to back, doing circles one direction and then the other. And it just kind of helps our bodies know like, hey, we need to lay down new collagen that is more aligned and more uniformed so that this tissue can function like it's supposed to. Because when we have a scar, our body's essentially just laying down tissue as fast as it can.
And it's like thicker.
Yeah, so it's bulky, it's not going to function the same, but the goal is just to close the gap, you know. So when we do those techniques, we're teaching the body like, hey, let's rework this, let's break this down gently and let's rebuild it more uniform so it can function like it originally did.
I love that.
That might be more advisable for women with previous scar tissue. Obviously with all of this, you need to ask your own healthcare provider what they'd recommend, because I don't know your case and there could be some that's appropriate.
And then do you recommend that they use like a oil or something?
Yeah, you can use vitamin E oil is really great for scar tissue. Or you can use like coconut oil or something like that.
Coconut
oil. Super natural if you are doing, you know, whether you're doing the massage or the scar tissue work. Additionally, we want to preggo brain, trying to think of things I've already gone through. I think those are really the main things. Like if you're getting really, really close, we want to work on relaxing our pelvic floor, perineal massage, and pelvic inlet opening. If you're earlier on, like, let's build some serious strength. Let's build up those quads, those glutes. Let's, you know, work on our pelvic stability so that we don't have aches and pains and things that are upregulating our nervous system going into birth. But as we're getting really close to birth, we also don't want to be like doing these super, super strenuous workouts.
Yes.
Out, because we need to conserve our energy for birth.
Yes. Don't listen to the myths to go up and down the stairs, like my grandma told me.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, there are times that we want to get going and you kind of push through, but you have to be mindful because it is a marathon. And that's what I love. I love to remind women, like, birth is a marathon.
Yes.
And so ideally, we're training for it from day one. We're not training for it in the last
2 weeks.
Month.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be really difficult if we're training for a marathon in a month. But we, you know, it's never too late. It's not hopeless. There are tons of things we can do to support ourselves. But the further out we can start that and just get really fit, like, we're much less likely to get exhausted. We are more likely to be really strong in all the weird positions we have to get into to have a good birth experience.
And push better.
Yes, and when we get postpartum, our body is recovering from a better state, rather than being like, you know, not our best.
Yeah. And can you just give one more, like, tip for postpartum recovery? Because there was a few people that were interested in that, too.
Yeah. So I would kind of say, you know, kind of like I was just saying, if you can take the time in pregnancy to really understand a proper way to do breath work, to connect with your pelvic floor really well, how to do the different positions like I was talking about, like contracting, relaxed, elongated. If you can work on your core activation, like if you see any of my reels where my big old pregnant belly just goes bloop.
Yes.
You know, doing the core activation, it's harder when you start towards the end of pregnancy, but even if you've got like a couple of weeks, it'll make a huge difference in your postpartum recovery. Because it's riding a bike, you know, it's like, okay, this crazy experience happened. I'm reestablishing these connections, but it's not just from scratch. Right. So really my top tip would be like, start your postpartum recovery during pregnancy.
Right.
But if you haven't and you're already postpartum, that's okay. We really want to start by focusing on taking a really high quality 360 breath. We want to make sure we're not just chest breathing. We want to time those breaths. Like we can do a breath in for four counts, hold it for four counts, out for four counts, make sure we're getting those really deep diaphragmatic breaths. We want to reconnect to our pelvic floor and tie that to our breath. There's a sequence that we optimally want to see. We want to reestablish that connection with our core. That's where I start. And then I like to say, like, let's start some dynamic mobility exercises and things, because people are probably a little stiff and need a little look.
I love that. I have one more question, and then we'll end it. I know it's, like, getting long. What about the mamas that have issues peeing in their pants when they're pregnant? Can you talk about that? Because I have so many mamas tell me that, and then they think it's all normal, which it's really not, right?
It's never normal to pee your pants. And I can't believe I have to say that, but it is never normal. It's common.
It's very common.
It is never normal. It doesn't matter if you're 9 months pregnant with your 15th child. It is never normal. So what's happening with that most of the time, is simply a disruption between our brain and our pelvic floor. Because a lot of women who I work with, it's not actually weakness. Like, they're not just leaking all the time. It's when they cough or sneeze or stop, something like that.
Or laugh.
Yes. So when our intra-abdominal pressure increases rapidly, that is when we tend to have those leaks. And that happens because our brain is not connecting to our pelvic floor muscles correctly. So usually when we cough, sneeze, laugh, jump, things like that, our brain tells our pelvic floor, ooh, do a really, really high impact contraction really quick so that we don't pee our pants. And so sometimes that gets disrupted because of the stressors of pregnancy or because we had birth or, you know, whatever. So we can remind our pelvic floor to do that by practicing when we intentionally cough, doing a specific type of Kegel. So it's definitely something we can address during pregnancy. You do not have to wait until after delivery. And in fact, I'd really say you're doing yourself a huge disservice waiting, because again, like, your body's about to go through birth, which is really taxing. So it's better to fix that problem now. It's going to be more challenging to fix postpartum if you wait.
I love that.
Definitely be done, but just do yourself a favor and don't wait.
I love that. Thank you so much, Emily.
Yeah, cool.
I love the kids in the back.
Yes, they are. They're having a good time.
That's all that counts.
Yes, just chaos.
Yeah,
but this was so much fun, and thank you so much.
Thank you. We have to do a part 3.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Pelvic Floor Fit podcast. It is my absolute honor to empower, educate, and inspire you mamas to have the most amazing motherhood journey possible. If this was helpful for you, please leave me a 5-star review and send this to a mama who needs to hear it.